It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, when you listen to Farm to Table Talk, it's because you're curious, too, about our food system, about how food is grown and what we eat. Well, I'm happy to have someone on the program today that has written about the food system. She's obviously curious herself, has been recognized many times over, and recently with an award we're going to talk about, too. And I'm just delighted to have as my guest today Dr. Julie Guthman. And Julie is with UC Santa Cruz. Julie, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, Julie, you have spent a lot of time looking at food systems, and you've written about food systems. How does that get to be your job? What professors, what departments actually say, okay, we're going to let this professor write and look and research and talk about food systems? How does that happen that you get to do that?
Well, I was very lucky, but it was more than luck. It happened to have to do with the time in which I was hired. And to explain this, I have to talk a little bit about the major into which I was hired, the department into which I was hired. So I've been working for the Community Studies program. It used to be department. It's no longer. But the Community Studies was one of the first majors to be established at UC Santa Cruz, and Santa Cruz as a campus came into being in the 1960s, and as everybody knows, there was a lot of students who were quite radical and wanted to have some sort of worldly impact on what they were doing. And so the community studies major was established in that context. And that is that a lot of our students wanted to come to campus and still have some sort of impact on the world. And so the major was developed around a full-time 6-month field study in which students would go about and work on in social justice or social change organizations. And the major was developed around supporting that. So they would get a lot of preparatory work and then come back and write about it. So it was a very activist oriented major. So if you look at what students were interested in over the course of community studies, I believe it's 48 years now. If you look over the course of that history, you really have a sense of like the changing times and what kind of activism students see as possible. Around the 2000s, the department made a pitch for having somebody who come in and work on local and global food systems because there was growing interest among our students on food systems, and food system change is one of the arenas that they wanted to participate in, the one arenas they wanted to study. And so the department made a pitch and got that line approved. And and they were interested in somebody who could teach political economy of the world, but also who could teach something about food. And it just so happens I had done a dissertation at University of California, Berkeley in geography on the political economy of organic farming in California.
You were almost ahead of your time then.
I was ahead of my time in terms of, not in terms of organic agriculture, but in terms of scholarship on it. At the time I wrote that dissertation that became my first book, there were no social science studies of organics. Certainly in California, there was maybe, I think there was one other in the United States, and then I have a friend in New Zealand who also was doing something very similar at the time. There was somebody in Ireland, but it was really a handful of us that were looking at organics. Is a kind of a, in terms of like political and economic changes, and not so much about, you know, soil science or that sort of thing. It was a social science study, and so it was I was the right person at the right time for this particular position. Extremely lucky, and so I got the job, and then so much of my research thereafter was really in reflection of working with my students who were doing various work in social justice, social change organizations around food and agriculture, and watching their interests emerge and change, and watching, you know, just what the kind of things they were interested in studying. I saw that arc change over the, you know, I've been here 13 years now, and that too reflected what was going on in the world of food systems. So it's been really instructive to see what kind of politics students see as possible in food system change, and it's completely helped my career.
From the time you started, started having students show up.
And yeah.
Did these students come with the idea that they were going to, change the system or become a farmer or open an organic food store? Or what?
Yeah.
What were the dreams of the kids that wanted to be in your class?
Yeah, that was the dreams of the kids that wanted to be in my class. They wanted to put their hands in the soil, as they often say. They wanted to be organic farmers or open an organic food store. That's what they came in with at the beginning. Later it became much different. But that's not what they got from my class. And, you know, there's other opportunities on this campus to learn about organic farming as a practice. For instance, the environmental studies program and the apprenticeship program down at the farm on campus has all sorts of opportunities for learning about growing. So they would come to my class with those kinds of expectations and hopes, but come out really quite transformed, because I've always had a friendly but still critical perspective on organics and many other kind of approaches to food system change. And so I'm very sympathetic to the desire among my students to change the food system, but I have always felt that voluntary labels such as organic are not the approach to take. And so, yes, my students came with those sorts of ideas, but I would kind of disabuse them of that. And I started to have a reputation for disabusing them of that. And it's also interesting to see how what they were interested changed over time.
And I'm wondering about these people that come to you, and
they're
idealistic, and they've got visions.
Yeah.
And you get them stirred up a little bit, and you don't necessarily tell them what they wanted to hear.
I do not.
So have you found that those years of teaching and looking at the food systems, have you seen people graduate and go on and get their hands dirty in the soil, perhaps, but maybe also grab a hold and affect the food system in some way? Have you seen some of your students that have left tracks that I think they might have picked up that skepticism or that enthusiasm in my class?
Yes, I've definitely, my students, as kind of world citizens, I definitely see these transformations. It's interesting with my students. Some end up working in the food system. They go into the restaurants or they work in food distribution, always with a more kind of critical eye. Some have gone on to do different work altogether. I think one of the challenges for my students and for food that just reflects the world that they live in is that it's hard to find levers, policy, or I should say levers of change that are impactful. And so my critiques were more that, like, a lot of what they were focusing on were their own consumption habits. You know, they're always curious about what I eat. Or they thought, you know, they wanted to work at the Santa Cruz Farmers Market or something like that. And what I was teaching them is that we actually need to look more at the policy environment if we really are to have any sort of impact. And I was working with a generation of students who had never seen anything positive happen in government from their perspectives. And so they couldn't imagine that policy could matter. But that's completely transformed right now, because they've just seen the election of a president who is taking away everything they think is important, everything I think is important. I don't know about the politics of this program, but it's been hugely impactful. So my students no longer think that policy doesn't matter.
Everybody's worried, I think, that there might be some big changes or bad changes take place as far as agriculture.
Yeah.
But you really don't know for sure yet at this stage that we're in exactly how it's going to play out, because there's just empty desks as far as agriculture is concerned.
Absolutely. But my students are unlikely to go into the agricultural sector per se. I mean, most of our students end up working in the nonprofit sector. So they've worked at food justice organizations. They've worked at community gardens. They've worked at fair trade organizations. They've worked at local food organizations. That's the gamut of stuff that they've done. Mm-hmm. And my teaching has always emphasized that those are good things, and they come out of, important critiques, but they're not enough. And so I've tried to encourage them to work for organizations that work on pesticides or environmental issues or organizations that try to change the farm bill. Very few of them have bit on that, because when it really comes down to it, many want to just work in the garden or teach people how to eat, but they get the critique. And some of them have moved on. Like I just had one of my students who was an award-winning student here. He just got into Harvard Law. And yeah,
That's great.
He's very excited. I don't think he's going to do food per se, but you know, they through these critiques, they kind of get a deeper kind of critique of what the menu of political possibilities are.
But he'll eat and he'll vote.
Yes.
And
he'll
and
do great stuff.
Something a few minutes ago, though, that caught my attention too. Yeah. Said, they're always curious about what you eat.
Yeah, I know. So they're always curious about what I eat.
Now you've got me.
Why? I never want it to be about what I eat.
Well, I know, but you see, you made the mistake of mentioning it.
I mean, look, I eat mainly organic food bought from the farmer's market. But for me, it's I know this sounds absurd, but for me, it's an aesthetics choice. It's like I really do not like the way most conventional food is produced. I know too much about it, and also I just think that the food that I shop at the Berkeley Farmers Market. It's gorgeous food. It's really tasty. These farmers really have learned how to grow well, and they're really good at it. So I mean, it's an aesthetics choice, but I don't think for a minute that's really enough to transform my consumption habits. Are not enough to transform what I think are the wrong things in the food system.
Well, you again, let's get back to the food system. You've written a lot about the food system.
Yeah.
And you've just been recognized. You've been granted a Guggenheim Fellowship.
Correct.
And a lot of people applied for that. I think there is a monetary award that comes with it. And there were thousands of people that tried to get it that didn't. So congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
So what do you do with that now that you've got this fellowship? What does that mean to you?
Well, for the fellowship, it's for an academic, it's the equivalent of a sabbatical year, right? So for me, it's an opportunity to take a year off to write a book that I've started writing when I was on sabbatical a couple of years ago and haven't had a chance to finish because it's been a very busy teaching year. So I'm going to use that opportunity to write a book. It happens I have another fellowship as well that hasn't been made public yet, so I can't disclose what it is.
Congratulations.
So I got really lucky. So I'm going to be writing a book because I had this abiding critique that the food movement, as really reflected in my students' interests, has tended to focus on building positive alternatives, which is fine, but really hasn't done enough to oppose and even undermine some of the worst parts of the industrial food system. And so, in effect, you have these two things sitting side by side, an alternative food system, which is, you know, works for the wealthy and those who desire, but it still does not kind of address some of the worst sorts of social injustices and environmental problems of existing food production. So that's been my abiding critique.
What do you think about hydroponics?
Right. No, this has been a big curiosity of mine recently, is the move to hydroponics. And it's been considered in California, right? Because if soil's the problem in strawberry production, I mean, this is anathema to some organic growers, right? But if soil's the problem, if you can grow in soilless substrate, hydroponically or aquaponically, that would seem a solution. And I don't think, you know, I don't think it's categorically problematic. I've been to greenhouses and seen much better working conditions. For example, strawberries are some of the worst work for farm laborers who are bent over, have terrible neck and back pain. And so in hydroponic operations, you can place the trays waist high, and so people don't have to work bent over. I've seen all sorts of innovations with labor. But as you say, it's not an advantage for California. California's biggest advantage is its soil and its climate. And once you start thinking about greenhouse operations, that why not move to closer to the markets, closer to New York and Boston and Chicago? Why do you need strawberry growing in high-priced California? And so the California industry, except for those who are who are distributors who are trying to come up with solutions, most of the California growers are not at all interested in hydroponics because they know it would really undermine their industry.
How do you popularize conversations about issues like this? I mean, in the past, I've seen that it seems like you're a little critical of Michael Pollan from time to time. And he's near God, I think.
Yes, no, I'm
in a lot of people's minds.
Yeah.
You've taken some shots at some of those.
Yeah.
How can we talk about these things? How can we, on a broader scope as society, take in what's happening at the farms and food systems and incorporate the trendy with the real world and the political world?
Yeah, well, I mean, and I understand why Michael Pollan popularizes this stuff. He's he's an outstanding writer, and he writes in a way that I don't enjoy or want to do. You know, I like to tell my story. I like to tell it with rigor, and I like to make my language interesting, and I think I'm effective at it, but it's a very different style. I think that, like I said, I think that people are ready to hear a more critical story these days. I think that the political times we're in right now has shaken folks up a lot and has scared people. And I think that people are more willing to talk about the implications of our border policy right now because they're seeing it, right? I think that when we hear about Scott Pruitt and Trump's interest in rolling back environmental regulations.
He's the new head of the EPA.
Right. When I think the people are recognizing, wow. You know, I hear my students say, pesticide regulation, it's so inadequate. I go, sure, it's inadequate, but wait till there's none at all. You know, I mean, so I think there's, because of the what's happened in our country in the past 6 months, I mean, it was building, but there, and the divisiveness and the kind of attacks on kind of basic environmental and health regulation, on basic social supports, I think this is a great time to be taking a more, I would say, structural look at what are the real challenges to moving to something that's more just and sustainable.
That's a great point. We're right on the brink of kind of looking ahead now about what might give you the most optimism and what we can get enthusiastic about. And I like starting at that point that you just did, where there's a lot of people discouraged and alarmed about where we stand right now.
Yeah.
But it's also a good starting point.
Yeah.
You know, if there's
absolutely
areas you want to engage. Something else that you said that a little earlier, so it's almost like you have to kind of pick the area you're going to get more engaged in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can decide to be concerned about the border issues. You can be concerned about the environment. You can be concerned about food justice. But my goodness, it'd be pretty hard for somebody to say, I'm going to work on all of this.
Right. Absolutely.
So did you advise people to pick their battle?
Students to pick their battle. I advise everybody to pick their battle, but I advise them to pick a battle. Take stances to be political rather than just to do the easy road. Like, I just think, you know, again, our students, they want to work in community gardens or whatever, because I'm not saying community gardens are bad things, they're fine things, but I don't think that they're going to have the transformative effects that we need to see these days. So I want to see students just pick battles. I want to see them work on policy. I want to see them work on opposing things that they think are really wrong.
Are you seeing that?
Yes. Oh, it's completely transformed just this last year in terms of, you know, our students right now are picking their field studies and they're completely different than they were before. Yeah.
What is that? I mean, is there kind of like a hunger that you see?
Outrage.
The tiger that
they're outraged.
Get out and go after it?
Yeah, outrage. They're outraged. Oh, yeah. Outraged when they're scared and they, you know, it's
the result will be, in addition to having their own farm and selling at the farmer's market, and whatever, that beyond that, they would become activists.
Well, that's the goal of our major, but they already saw themselves as activists, but it was a different kind of activism.
This sounds like something that you feel pretty good about. If you look over these next 4 or 5 years, and we do have these challenges, what gives you the most hope and the most encouragement?
Oh, well, the kind of opposition we've been seeing to the Trump administration is the most hopeful thing I've seen in generations. I mean, I feel on one hand, like many Americans today, I know I don't speak for all your listeners, but by my many Americans, I at once feel horrified and also very hopeful, because I think that the people are finally seeing what's really at stake with policy. And people are organizing, and it's and not only in these like kind of enclaves of the left coast all over the country.
Well, we have listeners of this podcast all over the country.
Yeah.
And they're going to need to look at some of what you've written.
Yeah.
I look online and I just think, oh my gosh, you know, like I'm going to go talk to Dr. Guthman pretty soon, and I think, and I start looking and I think, I can't possibly get through all these
things
you've done. You've done so much. And so if people want to see more of your thinking, of what you've written about in the past, where can they find what you've written?
Well, the books are the best place. And it's not that I'm trying to sell books. It's just that they're more accessible, because a lot of the articles are academic publications, and so they're not accessible to many. They're just not, that's the way academic publishing is. It's available by subscription, and it's sad, but that's the way it is. So I do have two books and a third one that should be out in a few months. It's an edited book. The first book, do you want me to tell you my books?
Sure,
the first book is Agrarian Dreams, The Paradox of Organic Farming in California. And that's published by University of California Press. The second one is also by University of California Press published. It's Weighing In, Obesity, Food Justice, and the Limits of Capitalism. The title of the third book is The New Food Activism.
Oh.
Right. And it's all about food activism that's becoming more oppositional, more focused on cooperation, collaboration, more kind of collective action.
I think people need to keep track of you. You've got some interesting things happening, and you've got students you've turned loose on the world.
I have.
We're going to be watching for those folks.
They're great.
And as people are engaging in this whole conversation and trying to get past the talking and the farming stage to try to make things happen.
Yeah.
So I really want to thank Dr. Julie Guthman for being on Farm to Table Talk. Julie, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.